Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. Welcome to this episode of Who's Counting, the podcast about all things elections. I wanted to welcome all of you and particularly welcome a return guest, someone who's been with us before, Ned Jones, who is the Deputy Director of the Election Integrity Network. And Ned, you've been with us before, but welcome back.
Well, thank you very much for having me this afternoon, Cleta, for a second appearance to bring everybody up to date on what the Citizens Research Project has been doing.
Well, that's great. Before we dive into the substance of what we're going to talk about, tell everybody, particularly those who may not have heard or watched the earlier episode, tell everybody how you got involved in the election integrity movement.
Well, I was a politician in New Jersey, was a city councilman back in the 80s during the Reagan years, and I've always been interested in politics and participated with candidates along the way as a poll watcher. And in the 2020 election, I was a poll watcher for President Trump, and there were some strange things that happened during the morning that I worked. People were coming
Excuse me, Ned, where were you?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I live right outside of Richmond, Virginia, and I was at a precinct in Richmond for the 2020 election as a poll observer, poll watcher. And people were being told that they had already voted when they came in to vote. I didn't make much out of it because we had the massive vote by mail and thought it might have been a clerical problem. But then I started hearing more and more after the election around the country of the similar problem. So I decided I would try to find out what happened. Why were all these people told that, and what were the possibilities? And that led me to researching the 2020 election. And I started to find what I call left-wing nonprofits who are supposed to be nonpartisan, but they're very partisan, who are involved in our election process. And started doing research in Virginia, because right away in Virginia after 2020, we had a statewide election for all of our constitutional offices and half of our legislature. So we had to get involved right away.
So that brings us to, so you started doing research and then and worked on the 2021 elections in Virginia, I guess. And then starting in 2022, you started working with CPI and the Election Integrity Network, right?
That's right. I was the election integrity director at the Virginia Project in 2021. And during my work there, I found about 15 or so of these left-wing nonprofits and what they were up to as far as infiltrating our election. And so we were able to develop some strategies to try to mitigate their impact on the election. In Virginia, working with a statewide coalition, we developed a massive group of poll watchers and workers getting involved in the election. And then we had a couple of unique strategies. One was vote as early as possible in our 45-day election season to protect your vote. In other words, if you vote on the first day,
in person,
your vote is protected.
In person.
In person, always in person. And so those strategies really helped, we think, mitigate some of the problems that we had in 2020. And then in 2022, in January, a little over a year ago, I joined the Election Integrity Network at CPI.
Well, that's great. And we've very much appreciate all the work that you've done over the past now 2 years and then in this year. So tell everybody, what is the Citizens Research Project? What does that mean and what are you doing?
Well, I met Cleta in 2021 during the Virginia election, and we had talked about citizens researchers around the country. And in 2022, we had a series of summits around the country showing people workshops and infrastructure for election integrity. And in May, Cleta actually came up with the idea that we would form a national working group of citizens called the Citizens Research Project. And what really started that was a left-wing program called the U.S. Alliance for Election Excellence, which was being run by the Center for Tech and Civic Life. You may recall that's the organization that distributed the Zuck Bucks in 2020. And so we wanted to create a structure that would monitor them and then find the other left-wing nonprofits, wherever they might be in the country. So we started the Citizens Research Project.
And so tell everybody how that works. What do you do? How do you do it? How does that work?
Well, initially what we did is we announced it at our summits. We started doing emails telling people that we were going to form this group. And we started to have Zoom calls where we would invite interested citizen researchers to the call and start talking about the left wing and their infiltrators, as we call them, into our election system. And so I had my initial list, and then the citizens would look in their locations for other organizations. We'd monitor media. We had a lot of support from the other members of our team at the Election Integrity Network and the different coalitions around the country. And now, after our work, which started about mid-year last year, we're up to 365 people on our mailing list, and we average between 70 and 80 on our weekly call. What happens, though, we do a weekly report, so we keep everybody up to date, all 365, so we know that they're out there doing their part to figure out about these infiltrators and what they're up to.
And how are some of the ways that you tell people that they can find out what's going on in their local election offices or in their states?
Well, we give them a set of tools. The first thing, and actually this comes right out of Cleta Mitchell's Citizen's Guide to an Election Integrity Infrastructure, the booklet that she wrote last year, that the key to our success in doing this is a relationship with the local election officials. Now, that can either be a positive relationship where we're getting a lot of information about how they run their elections, or unfortunately, in some cases, it's the kind of relationship where we don't get a lot of information. And so we want to build that relationship if we can. We tell our citizen researchers to go to board meetings, commission meetings, any meeting where a decision might be made about the election process, to be there and to get all the information that they can. We tell them to review minutes because things in the past lead us to these organizations. We tell them to monitor state boards of election, either by Zoom or in person. And then when all else fails in our gathering of information, we resort to a more formal FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, or in some states it's called an open records request, where the researchers write to the officials asking for the information, correspondence, documents between the left-wing nonprofits and those officials.
So you have a list of some of the names of the people, of the groups that have really burrowed into the election offices, and that's who your researchers are asking about.
That's correct. In the sample FOIAs that we send to them, it gives them the list of those organizations that we want to track at the local and state level.
So we spent a lot of time learning in 2021 about what the Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, who basically, I believe, are responsible for changing the outcome of the 2020 election by nearly $500 million that they put into local election offices, specific election offices, not all of them equally, but in targeted states, to really drive up the Democratic turnout by basically turning the local election office into a Democrat turnout machine, which I certainly don't think that that's anything that people would ever have anticipated would happen. And then Mark Zuckerberg announced that he wasn't going to do that again. But tell everybody what has come into his place, come into existence in place of Mark Zuckerberg and his $500 million.
Well, Mark announced, I think it was in April, that he was not going to be funding these election offices in 2022. And right after, maybe within a couple of weeks, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, the same organization that had distributed the Zuckerberg bucks, announced a new program called the Alliance for Election Excellence, and a new stream of funding from the Audacious Project. And it was $85 million. It was a five-year program. And their goal was to organize in an alliance election offices around the country who could join the alliance and be part of this program. Now, their goal was to organize 6,000 election offices around the country. With the Zuckerberg bucks, they actually went to 2,500 election offices. And as Cleta said, targeted towards areas that Biden won. So this is more than double the plan of 2020. Now, what they did is they formed a partnership with other groups, many of them left-wing nonprofits that they're associated with. But another group is a for-profit consulting firm called the Elections Group. And that's made up of people who have a progressive background in the nonprofit world. They also partnered with a couple of university programs and a data company called the U.S. Digital Response. Most of these, I would say all, are progressive organizations. And so the Alliance has an agenda that we believe CTCL wanted to infiltrate into these election offices and affect how they're running elections.
So talk about how it works, just the mechanics of how it works and what it is that, what do the election offices get and what do they have to do?
Well, it's an interesting arrangement. From what we've seen, and there are now 14 what they're calling centers of election excellence. And these are election, local election offices that in some cases have received financial grants where it's allowed in the states. And I'll tell you about another one in a minute. And they've also, in many cases, joined the Alliance. So in the first hand, they're getting a grant if allowed by law. And then by joining the Alliance, they're agreeing to this. They're going to turn over basically everything from the election office, their procedures, their administrative policies, the number of personnel, the equipment they use, everything they have, and what they determine as best practices to the Alliance. And then what they're going to get back are credit services with the Alliance partners. And those partners
and the Alliance partners are these other left-wing groups.
Yes, the other seven left-wing groups. So the infiltration will come back in terms of teaching, coaching, and so forth from the Alliance back to the election offices. Because with membership, they actually get credits where they're going to get work back from these other nonprofits.
So now, is all the information that they're requesting and requiring offices to turn over, is that all public information?
Most of it is, but it's not easily released to the public in many cases because it's some of the same information we've been trying to get. They do mention in the contract that there is one clause that says the election office will turn over non-confidential information. And to us, we think that means, you know, the voter information without maybe the social or the date of birth. Now, they always say it's public information, but in some cases like Virginia, it's a $15,000 investment. In other cases, it's free. They're essentially turning it over to the Alliance. Now, I want to mention one thing. What the Alliance did last year, and they're pretty much under the radar without this activity, they went around and visited offices that showed interest in joining the Alliance. And that was their first major foray into getting information, because we have an email from one of the locations in Greenwich, Connecticut, and there's a whole list of things they wanted for their visit. And the registrar was very happy to put that together for them.
And they don't do, we don't necessarily always get that kind of cooperation from citizens trying to obtain information from the election offices.
No, we don't. Like I said, a lot of times we have to go to the FOIA request. And even in some of those cases, you know, it's a struggle.
All right. So you've been monitoring this. And what are our citizens researchers finding?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because they're operating under the radar, or the election officials aren't being forthcoming, because we haven't learned a lot. We partner with the Honest Elections Project, Jason Sneed, and he's done FOIAs all over the country. And he's starting to find some of the information, but it's been very difficult to get the information. And I think part of that is because one of the things we know, when we start watching, it changes things. We've proven this now for 2 years, and now they know that there's an effort to push back on these grants. Not like Zuckerberg in 2020, where it was just accepted as, you know, it's part of the election that year. Now you're seeing pushback. And many, and several of the grants have actually been turned down.
Well, explain that a little bit. Give us an example.
Okay, so if you look at Ottawa, Michigan, okay, which was awarded a Center of Election Excellence and a monetary grant of $1.5 million, because in Michigan, there is no ban. 24 states passed a ban against these third-party monetary grants. And so Ottawa was given $1.5 million. And the we call them registrars here. I think they call them clerks in Michigan, actually turned it all down. He turned down the grant. He turned down the membership because he felt there wasn't enough transparency and so forth, that he didn't want to take the grant or be involved in the alliance. Now, he did say that he saw the merit of such an arrangement, but it just shows, and I believe part of it was the public pressure on that clerk in Michigan, that was part of the reason why he did that. But we also saw in North Carolina, they were awarded two election centers of excellence, but in North Carolina, the grants were not banned, and so they were offered grants as well. Now, in those two cases, they turned down the grants, but they did become members of the alliance partners, members. So we feel like the membership is almost the most serious part of this, because that's where the influence comes. But they did turn down the grants, and I believe that was from public pressure. We have a very strong Citizens Active coalition in North Carolina, and they really put the word out once we found out about these grants. And so I can add one thing. What's different this time, Zuckerberg grants, we were talking about it after the fact, some people before, but mostly after. We're way ahead this time. We are watching it, we're learning, we're pushing back. And so in those three cases, we had it turned down. And I can talk about the Greenwich situation or
I'm just trying to think. So you say that you think the biggest problem is the membership, and that's where you have these left-wing groups coming in with their, quote, expertise, telling an election office, oh, you should do this and you should do that. And that's the part that's the most problematic, even worse than the money.
I think so, because they call it coaching. They call it, best practices, that they're saying they're going to collect the best practices throughout the country, and then they're going to tell you the best practices that they've found. But we know, because I've been on two webinars now with the Election Group, and that's the for-profit consulting firm that's part of the alliance, talking about other subjects, but it always comes back to the alliance. And so they're using it with webinars and Zoom calls to spread the word, and you can see that it's this agenda. It's an agenda about how to run an election. They're going to redesign the website form, and the first thing you'll see is how to vote by mail. It's that agenda being put on the election officials.
Well, I found something that I had written in 2013, a presentation I'd made in 2013, and it referenced a meeting of legislators, Democrat, leftist legislators from around the country who met in Washington in the summer of 2013. And they came up with a laundry list of the things they were going to do to change the election laws of the United States. And darned if you look back, they didn't do every one of them. And one of them was get rid of precinct voting, go to voting centers. Well, why would they do that? Because it's harder to track. The further, the bigger the area, the harder it is to make sure that you're able to reconcile the number of votes to the number of ballots to the number of voters, and reconcile that at each local level, so before it goes to the county, and then reconcile. But you have these big voting centers, you can't really do that, or it's much harder. And just so many things, vote by mail, quote, expand the electorate. And I do know, so you're right. They do have an agenda. These election experts on the left have an agenda of how they think things should be done. And it's not necessarily how the law has been for most of our lives, and it is not necessarily how most of us think the election should be run.
That's right. And you talk about 10 years ago, and that's how long they've been doing it. If you look at the Center for Tech and Civic Life, they haven't been around that long, but they're a partner with the EAC, the Election Assistance Commission, for training. And what they do is it's free training that they offer to these election officials around the country, but that's how they build the relationship. And so what they've been able to do, these nonprofit, left-wing nonprofits, is they have a strong relationship with election officials around the country. And so they start to believe, hey, this is the way that we're supposed to run elections. And so it's a re-education process. It's bipartisan.
Maoist re-education camps.
And it's a bipartisan problem. I mean, it's not, it's both sides think it's, quote, free money where there's no strings. And it's, and we know that's not true. So it's a challenge, but we're on it.
Well, I keep thinking, I keep saying that it would be as though in Kansas City, the Kansas City Boosters raised a bunch of money to train referees as to how to be really good referees at the Super Bowl. I mean, I don't think any of us would think that that was actually very fair. And I think that it's just, we want to, I think what we would all expect is that election officials and administrators would run the election according to the law and not allow them their processes and what they do to be shaped by either side.
Well, that's right. And, you know, when we start to hear about these projects, you know, ranked choice voting, voting centers, those ideas are coming from somewhere. And when you look deep into what these organizations are up to and the funding behind it, that's where it comes from. It comes from this, I call it infiltration, but getting involved with the election officials. And so, yeah, you're right. It is. It's just like those referees being trained by them. It would be the same thing.
Speaking of funding, what do you know about the funding of the Audacious Project, which is funding the Alliance?
Well, you know, that's a great question because the Audacious Project is somehow associated with an organization called TED.
TED Talks. The TED Talks platform.
And they're the organization that awards these grants, like the one that CTCL got for $85 million funded by the project. And the biggest supporter that we see behind it is Bill Gates and his wife, their foundation.
His ex-wife.
That's right.
It's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But
yes, and they're the big funder of it. And then you look at another one called the Bridgespan Group, which is a for-profit organization that advises these nonprofits. Speaking of ex-wives, they advise Bezos' wife about how to spend her billions on left-wing nonprofits. And they work with Bill Gates on how to spend his billions on nonprofits. One of the things that we look at a lot are the Form 990, where a nonprofit has to report their annual donations and who they've given to and report their activities. And I looked up the one for the Bill Gates Foundation. It's 1,370 pages long. Most of them are 40. So he's involved a lot.
Well, and I'm pretty sure that most of the things that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gives money to are not necessarily things that conservatives would be too happy about.
That's right. That's exactly. It's a very progressive agenda.
Well, and the same thing is true. You know, Bill Gates has been a big promoter of vaccines. Mm-hmm. And I read something not too long ago that he made quite a lot of money on the COVID vaccine. I'm not really sure how that works, but you might check that out and work that into your repertoire, because I think that there's they're just, when I looked at the other projects that the Audacious Project was funding, the other grantees, as I said, none of those things are in keeping with promoting American founding principles or things that I think conservatives would find to be worthwhile projects. And I don't mind if it's his money and he wants to give it to every left-wing group in America or the world, that's up to him. What I do object to is when they start using that, his billions, to come in and influence our election system. That to me is not right.
That's exactly right. It should not be a project of the Bill Gates Foundation, our elections. And you said it earlier, they should be run according to our statutes and that's it.
So tell everybody about what you've been doing in Greenwich, Connecticut. That's an interesting story. So take that from the top and walk everybody through what's been going on in Greenwich, Connecticut.
All right, Greenwich, Connecticut, in deep blue Connecticut, but there is a conservative element there in Greenwich, was one of the areas chosen to be the Center for Election Excellence. And with that came a grant for $500,000. By the way, their budget is about $450,000 a year, and the opportunity to be a member in the Alliance. Now, the story goes all the way back to July of last year. As I said, the Alliance was pretty much under the radar last year. We only found one grant that we think came to them during the midterms, and that went to Milwaukee for a get out the vote operation. Otherwise, it was pretty quiet. We didn't know what was going on because they operated under the radar. But they invited, first on a conference call and then in person, election officials to hear about the alliance. And we've heard now that 90 of them, including Greenwich, they think they applied, but they really didn't. What it was a form that they filled out giving information about their election office, all kinds of information, again, that we would have had trouble getting, but they gave it to CTCL. And then in September, CTCL came for a site visit, sending their list of what they wanted to see. I believe it was 2 days, and it was representatives from the elections group that showed up. That's the for-profit consulting firm. And they left the site visit with all this information. And then in December, Greenwich, Connecticut was awarded the Center for Election Excellence, like the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval, which goes a long way with these election officials. Because they started touting that, yes, we are. We are one of the best election offices in the country. Now, in Greenwich, there's two registrars. That's what we call them. You may call them clerks who run the elections for that city. One's a Republican, one's a Democrat, very bipartisan. They were both all in for the grant and membership, telling us how great it was to be a part of it. Well, it came down to a vote in January. And they used a town meeting form of government. 200 members of the town meeting had to vote on the grant. So we heard from a very excellent citizen activist in Greenwich. She had a whole group of conservatives who were against it. And we kind of organized a meeting. We had Scott Walter from the Capital Research Center and Jason's. Well, Scott was on the first one and myself. And we talked to them about the alliance and some of the information we already had from around the country. And what it really was all about. And they were, you know, they were confused because the registrars were so for it. And we had to explain to them that it's really a re-education process. We found out that the registrar was sending people to places like TurboVote. He had done all of the Center for Tech and Civic Life training. He had that long relationship in a number of years. So he thought that was how elections were supposed to be run. So in the January vote, it passed.
By it what? Passed but it by, was.
It passed by three votes.
Out of 200.
104 to 101 or something like that.
Right.
And immediately after the vote, people started complaining because they had put in a new electronic system, much like you see in Congress or your state legislature with a big board, everybody's name and how their vote is recorded. But 10 people's vote wasn't recorded. So they said the vote stands. The only thing you can do is a vote to rescind in March. Now, what they did, which was great, is they postponed the vote on the membership, which was a separate vote. But because of the confusion over the grant, they postponed the vote on the membership. So in the next 2 months, we stayed in touch with the activists. We had a couple of more Zooms where now we had Jason Sneed from the Honest Elections Project. He and the Locke Foundation in North Carolina had written a fantastic report about what the alliance was really all about. And so he presented and Scott presented. We did Q&A, and it was a great meeting and it was very informative. And so we felt like we had a chance. The activists, the group in Greenwich, were very active there, and they really spread the word after our meetings. However, it's really interesting. The registrar then had a meeting. He wanted to tell everybody what he thought the alliance was all about. So both the registrars held a Zoom and brought in members of the alliance from around the country. Well, they were the most progressive people you've ever heard. I watched the whole thing. And one of them came in with a member of the Center for Civic Design, which is a closely affiliated group with the CTC, Center for Tech and Civic Life. And their thing is designing. They design like ballots and envelopes and election materials. Well, they showed a presentation of how they came to Macoupin, Illinois, another grant location, because they were going to redesign a postcard. Well, it took 2 days. Now, I know it doesn't take 2 days to redesign a postcard, but what we could see immediately was this is a mission to get information, because during those 2 days, they had conversations with all of the election people in the office. They talked to the registrar. And so it just showed us how they are going to do it. And they called it coaching. And so they actually showed everybody what was going to happen. And then immediately after that presentation by the registrars, we had our final Zoom meeting just before the vote was going to happen this past Monday, and gave it a last ditch effort. About 100 people showed up, explaining again what the alliance was all about, and kind of debunking the registrar's presentation. Well, the vote came Monday. The first vote was the vote to rescind, and it failed. In other words, the vote to pass the grant stood, the rescind vote failed. And I think most of that was on, they didn't want to set a precedent of rescinding votes. I mean, there was a feeling amongst the 200 that we really shouldn't do this, because then we could rescind other votes in the future, and that's not a good idea. I don't think it was on the merits so much of the grant, because that meant the grant stood. And the vote was like 118 to 98. So three of the yes votes actually went the other way as well. But then came the vote for the membership. And again, this is, to me, the most dangerous part of this alliance. And they had the vote, and the lady read it off, and it was 101 to 101 and four abstentions. It failed. So on a tie vote, the membership failed, so he can't join the membership. He and she, there's two registrars. So now we're watching, because the citizens now understand what this gentleman and this lady are all about. I mean, they're all in on this, and they may try some way to do it. So we're going to keep our eye on Greenwich, but it's an interesting story, because in 2020, they just took the Zuckerberg grant. I don't think they got that much in Greenwich, but they got one with no discussion, no debate. And here we are in a blue state with no ban and tremendous pushback. It took 2 months to do it. We brought in experts who could explain it to them. And so we're trying to use this model wherever it comes up in other states. And that's why we need to find out where they're targeting and then do the same thing.
Well, I think that it's a cautionary tale, and the membership is really what gets these other left-wing groups in looking at the procedures and the processes and getting their nose under the tent and looking under the hood and getting information that normal citizens just don't have access to. So it's a really insidious, in my view, it's an insidious program and ingenious, but I just think it's important for people to know about this and to be able to watch and find out if it's coming to an election office near you. And if people wanted to participate in your citizens research project, can they sign up and participate and learn about what's going on around the country?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like I say, we have about 365 on the mailing list. We're in about 20 or 22 states right now. We want to be in all of them. So, yes, we encourage citizens who have an interest in this to sign up. The sign up links are on our website, whoscounting.us. And you just click on the link to register. And once you're registered, you automatically get the weekly notice of our meeting, which is on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And we welcome everyone. And so much of the information that we're getting, we're up to now over 25 organizations that we're actively tracking, and we're getting more every week. And we're into all kinds of different areas now beyond the alliance. And it's putting all of these groups on notice that we are watching. And it does have an impact.
Well, I think so. And I keep saying we need a toolkit that we can give to citizens so that they'll know to be able to go to their local election office, their county commissioners, their county supervisors, their county election boards, state election boards, and to try to ask them to pass resolutions to say that we're not going to have any private funding or any private influences inside the election offices. To me, that's an area that should be sacrosanct, and nobody but the election officials should be able to be there unless it's you have the statutory poll workers from both parties and observers from both parties. But other than that, I just don't think it's appropriate to have money or people in there who have a hidden agenda other than following the law.
Well, and you know, Cleta, 24 states have outright banned it. But what we found this year, one of the things that CTCL is doing, they're using a massive legal staff to try to work around the statutes that do ban the grants. DeKalb County comes to mind, where they awarded the grant to the governing body rather than the election office to try to work around the statute.
I think the legislature in Georgia is getting ready to undo that.
Yes, they're fixing that. But we looked at Tennessee. There's an active progressive election officer in Tennessee, and their ban has the same, I call it the Georgia loophole now, where other people can sign off on approval. We looked at the ban in Utah, and a very progressive election official out there. There were some election excellence centers named, but no grants, said there was a way to work around the Utah law. So we know that's something they're trying to do. And so we're telling our citizen researchers, it's every state, whether you have a ban or not, they may actually be trying to work around it.
And the bans you're talking about are the statutes that were passed in the last 2 years prohibiting private money from flowing into election offices.
That's correct.
And like in North Carolina, the legislature passed it. The Democrat governor vetoed it. Same thing happened in Wisconsin. So there are even more state legislatures that have passed a prohibition on private funding of election offices. But those were vetoed by some Democratic governors. But in any event, Ned, we really appreciate all your work, all your hard work. We hope people will go to our website, whoscounting.us, sign up if you're interested in the Citizens Research Project Working Group. We certainly would invite people to join and keep up the good work and keep those citizens out there holding election officials accountable to keep all the partisans outside the election offices.
Thank you so much for having me today, Cleta. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the Citizens Research Project.
Thanks so much, Ned. And with that concludes this episode. We appreciate your joining us. We hope you'll share this episode with your friends and neighbors. Subscribe to the podcast, and let's do what we can to save our elections. We'll see you next week. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for joining Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.